Indoctrination system. Can't call it that. Let's suss what's going on. Education system. Gandhi once was asked what he thought of Western civilization, and he said, I think it would be a very good idea. And the way the education system works, I think it would be a very good idea if we had some, is to turn people into left brain prisoners. And I'll just give you an example. I'm now going to describe the examination system and the school college system, you know, because we're very bright, you see. What you do, as conventional science has accepted and the whole thing, that we have two sides of the brain. One, that's logic, worldview, the left brain, physical worldview, intellect. Can I see it, touch it, taste it? Oh, it exists then. And this is the inspiration, the bigger picture, the intuition, the filter of that. The idea of the education system, and indeed the whole system in general, is to turn us into left brain prisoners so we're disconnected from higher levels of ourselves. So this is exams. You pour loads and loads of stuff, much of which is provable crap, particularly the history and all that stuff, into the left brain. And you say to these students, you know, you hold it there, darling, just for a little while. And then someone comes along in the class and they say, ladies and gentlemen, you have 2 hours to complete this paper. Please pick up your pens. At which point, you have to spew this garbage out onto a page. Now, if you do it well enough, sponge out, in, sponge out, you pass your exams and you become very successful. My little girl's very good at school, you know, pass her exams. Going to university. Poor sod. And you're successful in this system. Come on, yeah. Now what happens if you are I am me, I am free? You take all this stuff into the left brain and you pass it over to the right brain. And the right brain looks at it and goes, ah, oh, it's a piece of shit. If you then regurgitate the fact that it's a piece of shit onto your exam paper with provable support, you fail your flipping exam. The whole system set up for the system to say, tell me what I want to hear and you'll be okay. Tell me what I don't want to hear and I'll jump on you. So what we're going to do today, we have this smoke screen in front of us. You know, this is reality. Oh, yeah. We're going to have a look behind and see what's really going on. Symbolized magnificently by this wonderful card I found. This is a peacock. This is a peacock projecting an illusion. But these two women peacocks have seen through it. Cut the crap and show us your willy. So what we're going to do today is look at this system there and say, cut the crap and show us whatever you got. Going to be a laugh. This is the mechanism by which throughout history, this goes back so long, the few have always controlled the many. You set up a structure, a compartmentalized structure. Secret societies are wonderful for this and the ancient mystery schools also, not all of which were malevolent by any means. I'm talking about the way this Illuminati has worked. You hoard significant knowledge at the top of the pyramid and you keep the people in ignorance of that knowledge. If I know significant things that you don't know, you are in a position where I can manipulate you. If you know the same as me, because we have the free flow of information, then manipulating becomes very, very much more difficult. So over the period I'm talking about, literally thousands of years to today, a structure has been created in which significant knowledge is hoarded there, and it's passed over through initiation and other secret networks only to those chosen to have it, and the people are kept in ignorance of it. This is one of the key reasons why when the European nations, i.e. the Illuminati, manipulated European nations, because it's European-centered at operational level, when they went into Africa, into the Americas, into Australia, and into the Asia as far as China, one of the key things they did under the guise of Christianity and destroying Satan was to destroy ancient knowledge and ancient accounts of history. because they wanted to keep the people in ignorance of what had happened and what was happening and even the true nature of who they are spiritually. And they've done it magnificently and hoarded it there. And I'll give you a quick example of the kind of stuff that's held there and not kept in the public arena. About 2 or 3 years ago now, I was invited through a third party to meet this guy in North America who works for the CIA as a scientist. He is an expert in magnetics, which is a cutting-edge area of expertise now. He told me the story of how he joined the CIA thinking he was serving his country. Because most people, you know, people say, it's the Freemasons, it's the so-and-so. It's not it's the anything. Most Freemasons don't know their ass from the friggin' elbow in terms of what's going on in the world and how their organization's being used. They're totally innocent of it. Not all of them by any means, but the majority. But they need that unknowing majority to smokescreen what's going on behind the scenes. So he told me that he joined the CIA thinking he was serving his country. And one day, because he realized that his technology and knowledge was being used to advance this very agenda I'm exposing today, that he rebelled and he refused to work anymore. One day, he has missing time. He remembers leaving home, nothing else. Next thing he remembers, he's lying on this medical-type bench. And as he got his faculties back and woke up, he realized there was something on his chest. And as he was telling me this story, he opened his shirt. And on his chest was this see-through plastic with sachet, almost like a see-through shampoo sachet. And in it was this orangey-golden liquid. And he said, what they did is they've manipulated my body to need this drug to survive, and it has to be replaced every 72 hours. And if he does not do as he's told and use his genius for malevolent reasons, then this is not replaced and he starts to die. And he's got kids. He wants to see them grow up. And he's not alone. And what he told me is that up there is the technology that can create abundant growth in deserts without water, using magnetics and resonating the natural energy fields and vibrational fields of the earth and indeed the plant itself. That free energy technology, which would mean we have no more utility bills, is known and has been known for decades. The cure for cancer has been known for decades. Why are these things kept out of the public arena? Because if there were no empty bellies, if everyone had abundance, which this planet could provide, if we ran it right and shared it outright, if we had abundance, we would have choice. Abundance equals choice, choice equals freedom. So they manipulate scarcity because scarcity equals dependency and dependency equals control. And if you have enough have-nots, then that frightens the friggin' life out of those who have because they see what happens if they don't serve the system. You'll become one of them. It's all fear and manipulation. And so when I started to understand, particularly with a book called And the Truth Shall Set You Free, which incidentally was funded by a Jewish friend of mine in England. I'm going to wake up at the end of this week and I'm going to be lying in bed in London or Los Angeles somewhere. I'm going to think, well, that was a strange dream. I don't know. Anyway, I thought I was in Vancouver. Isn't it strange? When I started to see that how this system worked, towards the end of the day when we tell this chronological story and we get right into the modern world, I'm going to explain how this system works. It's ever so simple how a few can manipulate all the different institutions. I started to think, well, when the hell did this start? Because, you know, this couldn't have been put together in 5 years or a few decades. It had to go back a very, very long way. So I started going back and back and back. And I got right back into the ancient world before I was picking up anything like an origin to this. And I'm probably nowhere near the start. It's just a point where you can pick it up and go with it. But it probably goes back further than that. And what you find when you get back there is that the idea that far back in the ancient world there were just primitive people is utterly, utterly ludicrous. But if you establish and you reveal publicly in mainstream that they weren't just primitive people, and in fact there was some very, very advanced technological knowledge back there, then the whole house of cards of conventional history starts to fall. You don't want that. As George Orwell said in his book 1984, words to the effect, he who controls history controls the present, and he who controls the present controls history. In other words, if you control the writing of history, you can give people a false fix of where they've come from, therefore giving them a false fix of where they are. That's why the rewriting of history has been so important, and that's why the destruction of historical accounts all over the world has been, and the destruction of them has actually been so important. So I started to go back, and when you realize that back in the ancient world was phenomenal knowledge as well as no knowledge, suddenly some questions start to be answered, some mysteries. And the mysteries are very important, you know. It's great mysteries, because if something comes to light that demolishes your version of life or history, and you say, well, if that's true, mate, what about that? You go, it's a mystery. It's lovely. I just keep it. It's a mystery. Oh, it's a mystery. And you leave it there, because then you can concentrate with your vision of life. And so one of the things that I hear from the academics is that there was just these primitive people in the ancient world. The question, therefore, is, who built these buggers then? Simple question. What the academics say, you'll say, because, you know, we academics are also. We academics of universities like Cambridge and Oxford and British Columbia, you know, we're very, very clever, you know, very bright indeed, very bright. And we've had a discussion, you'll say, and we've come to the conclusion, you'll say, that these pyramids were built like this, you'll say. These pyramid thing, you'll say. What they did, you'll say, is they built these ramps, you'll say. I'm not kidding. They built these ramps, you'll say. I know they had to use as much stone to build the ramps as they did the pyramids, but we don't go into that because it gets a bit complicated. They built these ramps, you'll say, and then they pushed their stones, their little stones, yes, 270 tons, some of them, quite right, up their ramps, you'll say, and they built their pyramids. Very clever, but very primitive, right? There is enough stone staring at you to build 30 Empire State Buildings. There is enough stone to build a wall around the entire perimeter of France, which is a friggin' big country. There's enough, the stone in the Great Pyramid weighs around 6.5 million tons. The idea that primitive people built that is off the flipping planet. This is Peru, right? 440 tons this sodding thing is. I mean, Bill and Fred down the builder's yard have moved that in, haven't they? Oh, come on, Fred. Bit more. 440 tons. And when you look at the way that these ancient structures all over the world, and interestingly, the older the structure, the more amazing it is. Obviously, some knowledge was lost the nearer we got to the modern world. I mean, I wonder if you've seen some of these documentaries recently, which is not exposing the manipulation, but just looking and asking the question, who the hell built these things? But they've shown that this phenomenal workmanship and the techniques are found all over the world. There was some kind of global knowledge way back in the ancient world. I mean, you know, Fred and Bill have hit this with an hammer, haven't they? Look at it. I mean, it's just magnificent. That's just one stone. This is a place called Baalbek in the Lebanon. To build this, they had to put three chunks of stone, they call it the trilithon, each of which weigh 800 tons in this structure. And this one's 20 foot high up in a wall. There's another one that's 1,000 tons, which, so I read, is about three jumbo jets. Primitive people did this. When you keep going through, this is, if it bloody changes... There you go. Oh, yeah, this is... Oh, sorry, I slipped that one in. This is Jean Chrétien. That's a mistake. Sorry. No. This is Easter Island, the mystery statues, look. I mean, some people might wish that was Chrétien because that weighs 10 tons, apparently. You know what I mean? Actually, it's more like Al Gore. He's also got some constipation. You know, keep trying, Gabe. You're all right. You'll be all right. You look at the Nazca lines in Peru, where with one continuous line, they... scored away the top surface over vast areas of the Nazca Plains and created these amazing depictions of animals and spiders and insects. Fantastic. One line. And these were only seen in their entirety, some of them, in the middle of this century, just before the last war, when people were starting to fly over them, because some of these things can only be seen in their entirety from 1,000 feet, 2,000 feet. And on a hillside in Britain, in Dorset, you've got amazing confirmation of the prophecy abilities of ancient people. Because these people clearly knew that Bill Clinton was going to come at some point. Do you know, that's actually, it's reminded me. Do you know what they call Bill Clinton's willy in the White House now? They call it the presidential clock. No, clock, madam, clock. You know why they call it the presidential clock? Because he's always got two hands on the face. Like, no, I'm not really kidding. Always got two hands on the face. No, that was rude, Dave. You stop that. Okay, right. He's a member of the club, look. Actually, talking to clocks, guy goes to heaven, sees St. Peter. St. Peter shows him around. And he sees this field of clocks in heaven. And they're all going around at different speeds. And he says to Peter, what are that field of clocks? He says, well, he says, everyone's got a clock when they go to the earth. And every time they tell a lie, the clock moves quicker, you'll say. Because St. Peter obviously went to British Columbia University or Oxford, essentially. I've only got one accent, you see. You'll get one. Anyway, so he said, well, that's interesting, he said, but what's that clock over there going round like an aircraft propeller? He says, oh, that's Bill Clinton's, he said. We use that as a fan. The question then came and comes, where did this knowledge come from that built these phenomenal structures that conventional archaeology and history does not want to look at because of where it would lead? This area of the world, what we now call Turkey, down through what is now Israel, Syria, encompassing Egypt, round including Iran, Iraq, and up to the Caucasus Mountains. Out of this area came phenomenal knowledge. Sumer is, by conventional history, supposed to be one of the cradles, or the cradle of civilization, extremely advanced. Babylon, down here, the same. Egypt, the same. And what's interesting about these amazing societies in the ancient world is that they went the opposite direction to how societies normally go. Normally, you start at this level, and through learning, trial and error, experience, you grow to greater levels of knowledge and understanding. They went like this. They started at their peak and then gradually fell away. Obviously, at this point, there was a massive infusion of knowledge. From where? So when I got back in the ancient world and I'm scanning around, I had two things in mind. One, where did this knowledge come from and when did this manipulation start? And secondly, why are the ruling families of the world today, whether it's the British royal family and the aristocracy of Europe or the Eastern establishment families of the United States, why are they obsessed with interbreeding with each other? It's not just snobbery. You go back as far as you want. These families have interbred incessantly. Why? What's the game? It's not just snobbery. So you go back and you ask the question, who were these gods in the endless ancient accounts? The gods that brought knowledge, the gods that brought civilizations of various kinds. The gods that endless accounts say, including the Old Testament in Genesis. The gods, or the sons of the gods, who interbred with humanity, creating hybrid bloodlines. The Old Testament calls them the Nephilim. But that's just one expression of a constant theme around the world. And for anyone who has a problem with the existence of life off this planet, that's just a little bit of the Milky Way galaxy. Conventional science suggests there are at least a billion planets, even in that vision of possibility, and a billion trillion stars. The idea that life as we know it has only evolved on this one little planet in one little solar system seems to me to be ludicrous. But when you talk about it, what do you get? He's bloody mad, he is. He thinks there's other life in the universe that's more intelligent than me. You know. And you're giving it, look, darling, I've seen cups of coffee more intelligent than you. We don't have to go off planet for this. And when you go and scan these ancient accounts, and my goodness me, I've only done a bit of it. There's so much. You find these recurring accounts. This is just part of something which has become known as the Sumerian tablets. In 1850, in what we now call Iraq, tens of thousands, and more were found later, of clay tablets were found that were buried, it's estimated, around 2000 BC, but they tell stories that go back thousands and thousands of years. They relate to that same area of the world, Sumer, between the Euphrates and the Tigris rivers, in what we now call Iraq, and that area that later became known as Assyria, same area. And in these tablets, as they've been increasingly translated, they tell, this is just one example of what I'm talking about, the story of a race of gods called the Anunnaki, which I understand from translators in Sumerian means those who from heaven to earth came. And it tells how these Anunnaki brought advanced knowledge, took over control, and interbred with humanity, creating hybrid bloodlines. And the hybrid bloodlines were put into the positions of ancient ruling royal power. Now, what do we talk about? What have we talked about all the way through the centuries? We talked about this thing about the divine right to rule. The divine right to be king or queen or leader as a result of your bloodline. And the more you research this, you find this has nothing to do with the divine, all that is, the gigantic I. It is to do with God's. In Genesis, where it talks about the sons of God interbreeding with the daughters of men, creating the Nephilim, when you go back to what that was translated into English from, it says the sons of the gods interbred with the daughters of men, creating the hybrid line, the Nephilim. And they even talk in the Sumerian tablets of how some of the first interbreeding was done by what we would call test tube methods. Now, in 1850, ludicrous. You would have thought, 2000 BC, what? We're doing it now. This is an amazing man. One of my greatest friends on the planet, and it's such a privilege to say that. He's a 78-year-old Zulu shaman. He's the one on the left, by the way. Called Credo Mutwa. I met him first in 1998 when I first went to South Africa, where incidentally they dubbed me anti-Islam. You know, I'm getting a complex, you know. And we talked about the Illuminati, which he knows all about in Africa, because that glorious continent has been crucified and raped by this system. And we also talked about the extraterrestrial connection to the Illuminati. And we talked for hours, that's as far as it went. I went back this August, or last August, 99, and he'd read The Biggest Secret by this time, and the moment I kind of started circulating in Johannesburg, he was on the phone to me. I must talk to you, I must talk to you. I went to speak with him, and he tells, and I've done a couple of videos with him, because once he started speaking, I thought, he's 78 years old, he's an ill man, diabetes and stuff, and I thought, he's got no one to pass this knowledge on to. And I thought, I've got to get this knowledge down, because my goodness me, it mustn't be lost. And I talked for him for hours and hours and hours. And he said, I've read the book, and I'm going to tell you what I know. I shouldn't tell you what I know, because I was initiated not to, but the world's got to know this, not the few anymore. And he told me the story of Africa, the black African history. And what he told me was the same story that I'd uncovered around the so-called Western world. That a race of gods, which quite possibly started on Earth and went away and came back a long time ago, which is why possibly they think it's their planet, interbred with humanity, created hybrid bloodlines, and these entered the positions of power. Not only, he said, among the white aristocracy and royal families, but also the black African royal lines claim descendants from the same gods. And he showed me artifacts to support what he was saying, because being a Zulu shaman and one of the last, he is a man that attracts loads and loads of these artifacts. And he showed me this. This is called the Necklace of the Mysteries. It's called a necklace. It goes on his shoulders, and it's incredibly heavy, made of copper. And he says that it's at least 500 years old. It's been mentioned 500 years back. He says it's at least 1,000 years old. And it tells the story, symbolically, of African history. And at the front, in pride of place, you have an earth woman, and you have an extraterrestrial with a big willy. And how can I put it? On the necklace, that fits into that. And what that is symbolic of, 500 years back this is now, at least, is of this interbreeding, which is at the heart of the African, black African knowledge in this underground stream, which had to go underground when the Illuminati European control races came in and destroyed. As Credo said, they milked the minds of the shaman and then killed them. So if we move through this necklace, this is a closer up version of it. This is the Earth Woman. Now, interestingly, this willy here is now copper. But what Credo says is that in the original, or originally, it was gold. Now, this is in southern Africa. And this reflects, of course, and relates to this classic legend of the ancient Egyptian culture, the golden penis of Osiris. And when you go through, here's a close-up of the extraterrestrial, and I'll tell you about him. I said, you know, did they really look like that, mate? You know, and he said, no. And the reason for this will become clear as we go along. He said, these gods, they call them the Chitahuri in the black African shamanistic stream. He said, they said, anyone that depicts us as we really look, instant death. So he said, what the people started to do and had to do was to symbolize the gods in a way that made them look not human, but not exactly as they looked. And here's the Earth Woman. In fact, I went out with someone like that once. Now, I emphasize, this is 500 years old at least. He says 1,000. This is hanging from the hand. It's a classic flying saucer. This is the side view. In the African sun, it's very difficult to take pictures. But this goes down exactly the same as up there. And I said, what's that? He said, well, according to the African historical knowledge, this is what the Chitahuri came in. He said, they never came all the way in these. These, according to what we're told from the ancient accounts, they came out of much bigger ships and went around the earth in ships like this. Also, interestingly, when you look at the hand, now this is a few things here are going to become very important as we go along, because the talk layers, as you'll see as we go along, layer on top of layer on top of layer. This is just the foundations here. Here we have the sun, and the symbolism of the sun is massive in the Illuminati, as you'll see. Here you have the constellation of Orion. Now, lots of people who have investigated in the modern world UFOs and stuff have connected some of these extraterrestrial beings to Orion. Here's a 500 at least year old artifact from Black Africa showing the symbol of Orion. Over here you have what has become known as the Star of David. Again, people think it's a Jewish symbol. Well, the Jewish religion uses it. In fact, it is an ancient esoteric symbol that can be found all over the ancient world, going back as far as you want to go. It seems to be a symbol to do with the fusion of spirit into matter, the fusion of male and female, the fusion of opposites into harmony. Now, in the center here, you have that image, the cross in the circle. That will become very significant as the day unfolds. But here, perhaps the most significant in relation to the Illuminati, is the eye, the all-seeing eye. We will see, as this day unfolds, the fundamental symbolism to the Illuminati, all around us again and again, of the eye, the all-seeing eye. So I said to Credo, what's that? He said, that symbolizes the watchers, which is one of the names they used in the ancient world for these gods. He said, that symbolizes the watchers, the all-seeing eye of the watchers. Now, as the day unfolds, you'll see the significance of that in terms of the Illuminati. Interestingly, you know, the arrogance of the European streams who think, and the arrogance of the modern world, where we think we're at the cutting edge of human knowledge. This is 500 years old, maybe 1,000. I keep repeating that for emphasis. This is on it also, and that is the depiction of the ancient Zulus of the Earth. They knew it was round long before Galileo. Their name for time and space is almost exactly the same word, because they knew all that time back that time and space was the same. But it's Africa and they've got black faces, so they must be not very bright. The arrogance of it. And again, all around the world, you see the depictions of gods, this recurring theme. This is in the Hindu culture, where they talk about gods in very advanced technology flying through the sky. Also, interestingly, Credo talks about the fact that these gods had elongated skulls. I took this picture from it's a member of the royal family of ancient Egypt. And it's a very, very round skull, elongated skull. Now, I have a picture, couldn't get the computer to download it this morning, unfortunately, of a skull found at Chichen Itza in the Yucatan, in the old Maya area. And it was found some time ago. I think it might even be in Vancouver now, somebody was telling me. And it's a mirror of that. And again, when you look at other depictions of Egyptian royalty, no wonder they had big bloody hats, you know. This elongated head. And one of the things that Credo said to me, he said, there's still black African tribes today, you might have heard of them, who when their children are born, they bind their heads to elongate the skull. And he said, when I've gone to them and said, why do you put your children through this agony? The reply is, because they have to look like the gods. And it's interesting, you see that elongated skull. This is from the Cairo Museum, just down from the Giza Pyramids. This is a skull, I think this was found in South America. This was found in South America. Again, the same thing. What I'm saying here is that there is far more to life and where we've come from and where we are than ever we are being told. Again, as Credo said, you know,